Today on Straight Talk Africa, a look at the ongoing elections in South Africa. Could this poll be a game changer? That discussion is coming up next right here on Straight Talk Africa. Hello, welcome to Straight Talk Africa, live from the Voice of America headquarters here in Washington. I am Shaka Sali, and today we are discussing the elections that are underway in South Africa. The Electoral Commission of South Africa says nearly 27 million people have registered to vote in Wednesday's National Assembly and Provincial Legislature elections. The number of people registered to vote represents about 75% of the eligible population. My colleague Paul Ndiho explains what's at stake in today's poll.
The stakes are high as South African voters cast their ballots in today's general elections. This is the sixth election held since the end of the apartheid system. The poll also marks the 25th anniversary of the country's iconic 1994 elections, which saw the African National Congress Party with Nelson Mandela at the helm arrive at the forefront of the nation's political landscape. But now the ANC is facing an uphill battle to retain its dominance amid a series of corruption scandals. South Africa's President Cyril Ramaphosa says he's determined to clean up his country.
We want to rid our country of corruption. We want to rid our country of the malfeasance that has been happening in the past few years. We are going to make sure those Gempela who are found to be accountable have to be accountable before the law.
Political analysts say comments like these from the president have only added fuel to the opposition and their campaigning fire.
Mr. Ramaphosa says to the people, listen, he says this the other day. He says, yes, the ANC captured the state, but please vote for us. He says, we stole from your future. Give us a chance to steal even more.
Julius Malema, leader of South Africa's far-left Economic Freedom Fighters Party, has also taken to attacking government on corruption. The fight over land reforms remains a hot topic as people cast their ballots.
That's why the EFF says we must expropriate land without compensation and give to the people of Alexander to build their own houses.
Struggling farmer Meshack Nkongwane was a lifelong supporter of the ANC, but he says the party will not have his vote in this election.
We see corruption being investigated, but no one is being arrested. If it were me, I would have long been in jail. That's the painful part.
Young South Africans make up the majority of eligible voters, but they are finding it difficult to find jobs. The nation's youth unemployment rate is hovering at 53%, ranked among the highest in the world. Gomosi Sibabi has two bachelor's degrees, but she says it's still tough to find a job in her field.
You go to school, and then once you are qualified, you sit with a whole stack of certificates that you can't actually use. But then you can see within the public sector that, yeah, I can make a contribution. Yeah, I can make a contribution. But it's like they are just not hiring.
Swale Pele Mapula has a bachelor's degree in journalism, but she feels like she's been duped into believing education is the answer to poverty.
I feel scammed because in so many of these campaigns, right, they talk about unemployment, they talk about poverty alleviation, they talk about gender-based violence, but it's all a talk shop. And I genuinely feel like you're trying to target the youth, but even the representation in most parties is not, like, there are no young people in some of these parties even.
Political observers say this election is like no other. Paired with the risk of low voter turnout, the real impact of this election will only be seen as the ballots are counted.
Paul Ndiho, VOA News, Washington.
Thanks, Paul, for that report. Joining us in the studio today are two distinguished guests. Ndaba Mandela, co-founder and chairman of the Africa Rising Foundation and the grandson of Nelson Mandela. And Powokole Munyandu, professor of African Studies at Howard University here in Washington, D.C. And joining us live via Skype from Johannesburg is Anita Powell, VOA's Southern Africa correspondent. Well, I have to say, ladies and gentlemen, that I am profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host the three of you on Straight Talk Africa.
It's nice to Thank be you. Here.
Good to be here.
You're most welcome. Well,
thank you. I wish you could all be here with me, actually.
Oh, I certainly
wish. I was there as well.
Now, let me come to you, Anita, immediately. What is it like on the ground from your vantage point? Can you give us a sense of the mood, please?
Sure. So what's interesting is that the apathy that we just reported in that story is very real. But at the end of the day, 25 years after the end of apartheid, a good number of South Africans still do feel joy, honor, pride in the fact that everybody in this country can be counted today. That is the modern South Africa. So it's equal measures. I, of course, only spoke to people at polling stations around Johannesburg who were voting. So I didn't talk to the disaffected youth, to the 6 million young voters who the Electoral Commission says were eligible but didn't register. But overall, I would say it's gone smoothly. People who did vote were glad that they got to vote, but many said that they were conflicted about the choices that they had to make once they were in the polling booth.
Now, I'm sure that you've been able to talk and interact with a lot of people. Based on that, do you get the sense that this election is about the issues, or is it about personalities?
Wow. That's a great question. I would say it's actually more about rhetoric. And also the issues that...
Well, yeah, it looks like we seem to be experiencing some technical problems here. Let me ask you, Ndaba Mandela, you pretty much just came actually from South Africa.
Yes.
What is the mood like there?
You know, I must say people were very excited to vote, similar to what, Anita was saying. And, the demographic that I come from, I'm also from Johannesburg, and I'm 36 years old, so it's that age group that's just outside of the millennials. Mm-hmm. And we are obviously at the point where we look at the actual politics to say, does he deserve my vote? You know, and a lot of people are very dissatisfied with the ANC, with the corruption allegations, etc., etc. But I have hope because we have a new president who is a successful businessman. He comes from a successful background where he was. And I believe that he can turn things around. However, he has to be bold. He has to be strong. Because he's fighting a lot of people who are still have allegiance to the old president and old way of doing things. But I believe he can revive it and bring our party back where we belong.
But what about talking about your party? Of course, you mean the ruling ANC, correct?
I am Mandela's grandson.
The party of the Madiba.
That is right.
But Madiba was associated, for example, with values.
Right.
With morality.
That's correct.
With ethics.
100%.
It doesn't seem, frankly, from all the evidence on the ground, it doesn't seem like the ANC, his party.
But like I said, that is Zuma's party. That was Zuma's ANC. We have a new president. You must understand that Zuma was removed a year before he finished his term because the people had no confidence in him. Because they decided that this man can no longer stand for us. What he's doing to the party, he's killing the party. Therefore, we removed him and we brought in a new president. You must remember, South Africa is the only country on the whole continent of Africa who have removed two presidents before ending their term. So it shows you that our democracy is alive and well, and it shows that the ANC is alive and well.
And, of course, the first president, in 1994, was able to serve one term.
One term, and he finished his term. He's the only president to date who has finished his term because he did a good job. And so, you know, a lot of people complain, yes, Zuma should have left office maybe 2 or even 3 years before. Maybe he shouldn't have even had the second term. But I can confidently say that he was very much at the epicenter of some of the scandals and corruption and, you know, malpractices that were happening within the ANC. And now that we've removed him, I believe we can revive the ANC. But it depends on the strength of the new leadership that we have right now.
But Ndaba, what about reports suggesting that this election is, or could in fact be, a referendum on the ruling party, the ANC?
Well, it may be so. It may be so. But I believe in the next 2 days we shall find out. And it's still early to say. You know, people will complain and complain, but you have young people that vote a certain way. You have mm-hmm. older people that vote another way. So you cannot really say until the results come out.
When you talk about young people, the unemployment, for example, rate,
yes.
we're talking about more than 50%.
Yes.
Jobs, jobs, jobs. And the economy also seems to be stupid.
It is. We are in a recession currently. I know Standard Bank, for example, 2 months ago had to shut down 95 of their branches, which meant the loss of, you know, over 2,000 jobs. It's been a very hard hit economy, South Africa. And again, we can ask my colleague and friend and brother here mm-hmm. whether Zuma was at the epicenter of that or not.
Mm-hmm. Let me go back to Johannesburg. Anita, are you there?
Yes, I am. Very interesting conversation.
Now, talk to me about the evidence that you have been able to compile so far. Do you get the sense that people are voting for issues, or are they, in fact, voting for personalities?
Wow. That's a difficult question because we do have some very compelling personalities, or rather interesting personalities, in the mix. We have, of course, the firebrand leader Julius Malema, whose appeal is very obvious to young, disenchanted youth, disenfranchised youth, who believe that they should be more economically empowered. As we mentioned, there's a over 50% unemployment rate for youth. I think, though, people are voting mostly on the corruption and service delivery issues. I really do think it's that simple for many South Africans, at least the ones I've talked to. And those are the issues that are first in their mind. It is, how do we get the economy moving? How do we get rid of the rot? And who is going to lead us to a better life, the life that we deserve? And so I do think South Africans are voting more for personalities, especially since, a lot of observers and analysts have noted that Cyril Ramaphosa, while a very competent president, does not exactly have the magnetism of his predecessor. Nobody could deny that Jacob Zuma was a very magnetic personality, and the ANC knows that because they've used him to campaign in the Durban and KZN area. So I don't think that his personality is necessarily persuading voters. I think they are voting on the basis of issues.
How is the economic freedom, party, the Economic Freedom Fighters Party of Julius Malema and company, how is it doing among the young?
Well, I think we're going to find out on May 11th, which is when the final results will come out. We may find it out a little earlier, of course. Some predictions, which I don't necessarily put stock in, say that they might hit double digits. They hit an impressive 6% of the vote in their first election, which was the last round in 2014. And some analysts are saying they might get 10%, 12%, 14%. But I think it remains to be seen. I think the presence of apathetic and conflicted voters means that, and I know this for a fact, having spoken to voters today, many people went into the polling booth not sure that day, that moment, who they were going to choose. At least this is what voters tell me. Some voters also told me that they went in thinking they were going to vote for Party X and voted instead for Party Y at the last minute. So I think it's an open field right now, and I think we'll find out.
What about the second largest opposition political party, the Democratic Alliance?
The Democratic Alliance is the largest opposition party. They're the official opposition, and pollsters have said that they're expected to win about 23%. What's significant about that, I think, is that the DA isn't gaining significantly, despite all of the damage, despite the stink of corruption around the South African government, the ANC-led government. The DA should really be picking up a lot of votes, and they are not expected to this time around. And that's for a lot of reasons that I'm sure your guests can talk about, but there's been a lot of internal rifts in the DA. There's a lot of rhetoric that some South Africans are uncomfortable with, and so on. So the DA is probably going to maintain its status quo, which for them is probably not a win.
We know that the DA seems to be very popular in urban centers, especially the large cities. Any particular reason why it does not do well in the hinterland, the rural areas?
Well, I'm not sure that is necessarily going to be the case this time around. About a week ago, I actually went out to the rural areas and found, surprisingly, that these areas, which were considered the ANC's heartland, their bread and butter, were actually turning away from the ANC, and many were turning to the DA. So I'm not sure that that's the case, but a lot of it has to do with logistics. The ANC is thoroughly saturated at every level of government in small areas, in the rural areas in South Africa. They're extremely organized, and they're large. It's a large party, and it's a broad church, and they have something to kind of appeal to everybody. The DA just doesn't have the numbers. They're not the organizers, and so that's going to hurt them in terms of campaigning in far-flung rural areas.
Anita, final question. When you talk to people, do you get the sense that people feel like they are better off today than they were, for example, 5 years ago?
Wow. That is a doozy of a question, and I think that's the question that we could debate at length. The short answer is probably not. It's a glass half full, glass half empty sort of thing. You're basically asking if most South Africans are optimists or pessimists. I think most of them are probably pessimists right now. I think that they feel that this miraculous change at this milestone of 25 years hasn't come about. And so I do think that most of them are pessimistic. But then I think some of them are also realistic about how much a government can achieve. I think you have to remember that in 1994, the population of South Africa, the best way I can describe it, is it quintupled overnight. You went from having a privileged group of people, white South Africans, who were the only people who were really cared for by the government and given services. And then overnight, South Africa took in everybody who lives in the Rainbow Nation. And, you know, some people say, well, 25 years is not a long time to shore that up and to give everybody the same rights and privileges and services, most importantly, rights and privileges maybe, but services, it's a lot of work. But I do think that many South Africans are embittered and pessimistic and wish that more had been done in 25 years.
On that note, Anita, thank you very, very, very much for your insight.
Thank you.
You're most welcome, and good luck. Let me come to you, Professor Munyando. Let me ask you the same question I asked Anita a while ago. Do you think if you were to talk to me from the deepest, better part of the bottom of your South African heart and soul, that people are better off today in South Africa than perhaps they were 5 years ago?
Okay. Well, 25 years ago, run about 5 years today,
ago.
No, I'll start by answering thus. 25 years ago, my mother came back home. She had tears in her eyes. You know why? She had voted the first time. That's in 1994. If my mother was alive today, there is no way she would say that South Africa is worse off than the South Africa she grew up in. In fact, I beg to differ. South Africans are an eternally optimistic people. Yes. If they were not optimistic, they wouldn't come out in numbers. The world always marvels at South African numbers, snaking around rural areas, people waking up, putting grandmothers in wheelbarrows, in small rural school in the Eastern Cape, in the Northern KwaZulu-Natal. South Africans are a very, to a sin, they are optimist than optimistic people. Now, which makes it more egregious then for policy-making elites to not take that developmental aspiration so seriously. Because South Africans themselves have demonstrated an abiding loyalty to the African National Congress. In 1994, the ANC won by 62%. In 1999, it won by about 62%. In 2004, it won by 69.7%, at 70%. Right? Then later on, it won by another 65%. So the ANC has always dominated the South African polity. My point then is that the ANC has not taken it seriously within its own organization, knowing that much of the decision-making that needs to, consequential decision-making, that is, as far as policy is concerned, takes place within the ANC itself. So by the time the elections come around, Mr. Shaga, you could put Winnie the Pooh there, and many people in South Africa will still vote for the ANC if the Winnie Pooh says I'm ANC, right? So that puts that tells us a lot about the South African people's mindset, mm-hmm. and the extent to which the people like my mother are still alive and politically active is the extent to which this election today is going to veer. So it's a question of, is the ANC going to get less than 60% or not? And that, for a South African who's lived 25 years, seeing such a large margin of victory, the closest or the highest vote any opposition party has ever received in South Africa is 22%, right? So I'm looking out for two things. Is there an opposition party that's going to crack the 22% ceiling for an opposition party? Secondly, is the ANC going to hit less than its 62% election floor, which I'm going to predict it will?
The margin of victory.
Yeah.
Now, talking about KwaZulu-Natal, where you obviously come from, you know as well as I do that there are a lot of people who were ANC supporters who may be disillusioned because of the manner in which their son of the soil, Mshorozi, Jacob Zuma, was treated for having been prevented from completing the second term. Are they voting for ANC this time around, or are they going back to vote for Inkatha Freedom Party?
This is a great question. There's a pessimistic view that would say that, look, politics is local, right? And one of the most unpalatable facts about democracy is that human beings given free will, they vote for whom they want, regardless of the reasons. So I would say that this pessimistic view holds that there are people who are regionalistic in outlook. We cannot ignore that as serious analysts. And then these people are going to vote for whoever is from KwaZulu-Natal, and they might return their vote. But the optimistic view holds that the African National Congress, to its credit, is a behemoth of a machine when it comes to elections. Probably owing to much, some might say cronyism, owing to, some might say even patronage. So it's whoever can deliver a certain province. And Mr. Shaga, that usually takes place in the ANC before the general election, in the ANC's conferences, whoever delivers a branch and so on and so forth. So it's usually a fait accompli when elections come around. But it's for us serious observers then to see how much this deviates. So an optimistic view holds that, look, the people are still going to vote in large numbers in KwaZulu-Natal for the ANC because mm-hmm. of the ANC political machinery. However, a pessimistic view holds that it's going to be a less of a margin.
You know, one good thing about South Africa is that it happens to be one of those few countries on the African continent that allows its citizens to participate in a democratic process even when they live overseas. Have you been able to vote, for example? Did you cast your vote?
I wish I would have. I'm in the process of renewing my South African passport. There's a quirky South African law that says you need two things to vote overseas, an ID and a passport. And so if your passport has expired, which mine is in the process of being renewed, you cannot vote. So unfortunately, I was barred from voting. Hopefully that law changes later. But the analyst in me looked at the reason behind this as it was kind of the government's intention to discourage South Africans that have left the country and have no interest in the country. So if you don't have a passport and you have a South African ID, you cannot vote. So that's a very little known fact about voting or abroad.
I see. What about you, Ndaba? Did you vote? Were you able to vote?
I was not able to vote because there is a period in which you have to apply to vote overseas. And so by the time I had applied, that period had just expired. I think I missed it by a week and a half. Mm-hmm. And so, they sent me a couple of emails and they sat me down and they said, listen, next time, please make sure you apply in time, etc. You know, we really regret that you can't vote, but these are the rules and regulations.
Now, you are, of course, someone probably that would be described as an ANC life member, or someone that was probably born within the ANC.
Of course.
What is it, for example, that you think South Africans this time around should really vote and support the ANC, given the manner in which it has handled or mishandled the economy, given the manner in which it has been associated with corruption, something obviously that, would never be associated with the Madiba himself?
Yes. Given all these reasons that you have given now, it is very difficult for me to try and convince anyone to vote ANC. But I know that there are friends and colleagues, people within our, social community who are purely just allegiance to the ANC. You know, the one thing that we know is that we believe that it's only the ANC that can ultimately be the one to deliver the change that we seek. ANC is the only party that has the machinery to be able to affect the change that we seek. Unfortunately, it has been marred by massive and a long term of corruption allegations and all kinds of negative influences and corruption, you name it. But, the only way I can appeal, like I said, to the people is that when you look at our history and where we come from, you know which party is serious about bringing the power back to the people. Now, we must also be patient and understand that it's not going to happen overnight. We cannot be a Zimbabwe and decide to grab land, right, from our predecessors.
You're talking about the elephant in the room.
We have to make sure that our people are in a position where they have the skills, they have the knowledge, and the know-how to be able to turn that farm and make sure it continues to be productive. Now, if you just grab the land, same thing is going to happen in Zimbabwe. So we need a comprehensive 7 to 10 year plan, right? Where the staff, as each year progresses, they get more of the ownership of the farm, but they're also learning the skills and the knowledge to be able to take that harvest, process the food, go to the market, not just in South Africa, but globally, right? And at the same time, as the farm owner's percentage is, dwindling, right, he has enough time to look for alternative means to earn a revenue stream, right? So we have to make sure that all the interest of the different parties are looked after. Land appropriation without compensation is one point that I agree with Julius Malema.
That is one point you agree with Julius Malema?
Yes.
Now, you know, of course, that that is the country's policy because exactly. It was supported by the ANC
exactly.
And the EFF. Isn't that taking you very close to what happened in Zimbabwe?
No, I don't think so. What you must understand is that we are engaging, we are now saying, this is the policy that we're going to follow, but how do we implement it is the difference with Zimbabwe. It's the implementation. Hence, we have gathered the churches, because churches, if you think about it, have a lot of land, civil society, corporates, government, the public, to engage to see what is the most equitable way to transfer the land. I, for one, believe we have to do it over a 7 to 10 year plan. That's my personal view. But, of course, my brother here may have other ideas, and I think it's important to listen to every idea that is out there, right? Obviously, that has value. And then sometimes we may have to mix and match the different ideas of how we implement it. Or sometimes we say, hey, there's a clear winner here, and this is the way we're going to go.
I'm afraid time happens not to be our best ally.
It never is.
You are tuned in to Straight Talk Africa. We'll have more of a discussion in a moment. So please don't go away, because we'll be right back with you.
On Our Voices, we're talking about the news and issues you're talking about, sharing stories of development and growth across Africa, around the world, and in our lives. Topics that inform, empower, and change the rules. It's time for Our Voices with me, Haiti Adams Fitzpatrick.
And Hadiza Kiari.
And Ayan Bior.
And Orion Itangi Shaka.
It's time for Our Voices.
This is Straight Talk Africa on the Voice of America. What is your opinion about today's topic? Call us at 202-619-3111. U.S. country code 1. When you call, remember the following. Ask only one question. Keep your comment brief and turn down the volume on your radio or television. Now let's return to Straight Talk Africa.
We appreciate all of our audience feedback. Straight Talk Africa streams live every Wednesday on Facebook. You can watch our show there, and please have a comment. Now let's look at what's on tap for next week's program.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, as Malawi gears up for elections on May 21st, candidates and voters say flooding from Cyclone Idai is negatively impacting the vote. Some voters living in evacuation camps lost their registration certificates, while Malayan candidates say they can't get their message to supporters living in the camps. Uncertainty at the polls on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Today we are discussing the South African elections. Our guests are Ndaba Mandela, co-founder and chairman of the Africa Rising Foundation, and the grandson of Nelson Mandela, and Pukohule Munyandu, professor of African studies at Howard University. Earlier in the show, we were joined by VOA Southern African correspondent Anita Powell. Well, I have to say again that I am profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host the two of you on Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you.
It's good to be here.
Yes.
You're most welcome. Now, when you look back, what do you really think went wrong, Ndaba, for the party of the Madiba?
Well, to be honest with you, I believe it started during Thabo Mbeki's era. It's where things started to go south. Now, Thabo Mbeki had a specific style of leadership. he didn't have much confidence in the comrades that were surrounding him in order for them to be able to have open discussions and to be able to be criticized to discuss the plan forward. And so what he did is that he put more power in the executive power, right?
Mm-hmm.
He also stopped people from criticizing him, right? And so by the time Zuma came in, there was so much power vested within the executive power without criticism, because our party is one where we have open debate. Open debate within the party is welcome,
mm-hmm.
right? To discuss whether it's the campaign, whether it's the economic policy or the education policy, and people are able to come and comment and question, et cetera, et cetera. Thabo Mbeki changed that culture within the ANC. And so it followed on to Zuma. Now, Zuma is also a different character, a very charismatic character who has intelligence background, right? And I think, unfortunately, what happened there is that Zuma is not a good manager of money in his own personal capacity. And so he had other parties who were managing that on his behalf. Unfortunately, they took advantage not only of Zuma, but also the state. And that's why many people say the state was captured. Because if you look at the deals that were
talking about the Guptas.
If you look at many of the deals that were done, most of those deals, you know, were done through the state with their private companies, with the larger Zuma family at the helm, you understand? And from there, you know, things just started going down a slippery slope, to be honest with you. And we find ourselves at this juncture, right? I mean, there was a week in South Africa where we had two different finance ministers. I mean, we became a laughing stock to the global stage.
Mm.
But before that, South Africa was held in very high esteem. You understand? But there are certain fundamental mistakes that were done during Zuma's administration that people started looking down upon us. And that respect that we once garnered was no longer there.
But if I may interject, Ndaba here, in fact, Ndaba is my own tanga, what would say in Zulu, our age mate.
Colleagues.
Yeah, we're the same age. And if the ANC was serious about the renewal, Ndaba wouldn't be here now. He would be a minister in South Africa. Ndaba would be back at home being a deputy minister.
What special qualities does, in your view, does Ndaba have?
He's quite an eminent young man. He is educated. He's serious about the future.
And he has the pedigree.
But it is people like Ndaba that the ANC doesn't respect. The ANC is a gerontocracy, but it's not unlike other African countries, which is a huge folly of many a liberation era liberation parties. The ANC, for example, again, a second impediment to a serious change in Ramaphosa's presidency, I would say, comes from the stark empirical reality that the ANC the leadership of the ANC is quite a draw between factions currently. Mm. Right? If you look at the top six, it's who delivered Mpumalanga, who then stunted KwaZulu-Natal, and so on and so forth. So it's a draw. Tell me how Ramaphosa is going to navigate these very serious factions where the Secretary General is, all of South Africa who are awake know that he's a rival, so to speak. So the ANC has very serious problems. And the same people that are now going to govern a change and a growth in the economy are the same people who have been there for 10 years. So if the ANC was serious about change, the likes of Ndaba and his age mate, my age mates, they would be at the center of current decisions. Let's look at the major advisor of President Ramaphosa, a man called Trevor Manuel. He was in charge of the ANC's National Economic Committee since 1992.
And the former finance minister.
Now, reality tells us, You know, if we have 27% unemployment, what is the definition of insanity? Doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result. Yes. So while I support Ndaba's sentiment about the ANC being able to have a very robust debate, and the ANC is very good at internal democracy, but the ANC is not good at renewal. And even the ANC insiders say themselves, it's like an elephant. It's very slow to move. And so if you are interested in developmental imperatives, land, unemployment, inequality, there are still children in KwaZulu-Natal and the Eastern Cape who have to take off their clothes and put them in a bag to cross a river, then dry off and put them back and walk to school. And we expect that child to grow up and be a doctor. A serious country like South Africa should have zero tolerance for such things. It should be an egregious thing, right? So, and only a renewal of new blood can do that. That would be my pessimistic take.
That is a very good point that I have to say to my brother. You see, you have a generation who are liberators. They're not change makers. They still have the same mentality of liberation. And we need a new mentality from the new generation. And is what my brother is saying here.
And do they have, like, almost all over the continent, when you look at liberators or those people who call themselves liberators, they seem to actually have a sense of entitlement?
100%.
We must be, let's be sympathetic to our freedom fighters. There were three camps, many of them. There were the ones in the bush who stayed in the rest in the African continent. They were in Zambia. They didn't get a chance to go to school.
Right.
Then there were the ones who were in exile, who were in Sussex, Oxford, and having, according to their colleagues, they looked at them as having had a better time during the struggle. Then there were the vast amount of our people who stayed within the country, bore the brunt of this. So if you look at the succession of presidents, and they were the prisoners, right? Utata, the prisoners, right? Then you have Mbeki, the exiles. Then you had Zuma, who had a significant body of people who were one of the ones that were aggrieved, who stayed in Lusaka and Dar es Salaam, who were not as educated. The point then is that at the dawn of our liberation, these people, jobless, untrained, uneducated, what are you going to do with them? And that's how cronyism comes into place. So unless we have a very prescient, imaginative strategy for dealing with hungry comrades, because they are still there, that should be part of a developmental strategy for Mr. Ramaphosa, because he represents the ones that stayed behind, that had their ear to the ground, but some might say they were the ones most compromised, because they were the ones in close proximity to the levers of economic power. So we need a very big strategy on how to deal with hungry comrades. You can't wish them away. And they must feel entitled because they fought while others were going to school. No. Right? No. So I would like to hear what he thinks about that.
Now, Ndaba, you said something about the second post-apartheid president, Thabo Mbeki. There are reports, for example, that there are people who basically perceived him as a sort of intellectual snob, as someone that was very much detached, really, from the ordinary person in South Africa. Would you say that is a fair criticism?
No. I personally do not agree with that.
I think
he was very much in touch with the people, but he was not able to communicate effectively with the people. There's a difference. You understand what I'm saying?
Communicating.
This is a man that studied at Sussex University, and therefore spoke the English of the Queen at a different level than the average South African.
And smoked the pipe.
So when he came, that is a private issue. That's got nothing to do with us.
He's an intellectual, by the way, and very, very
so
profound at that.
When he spoke to the masses, he spoke at a very high level. And so the message would not necessarily touch the people compared to a Zuma. Compared to a Madiba, you understand what I'm saying? Who was able to down themselves or stand up, you know? That's the only criticism. I don't think he was a man who was out of touch. He was definitely in touch. Otherwise, you've not been able to be in that position. Let's be honest. To be in that position, to work yourself up, And to become a president, you have to take your hats off to that man. Mm. You have to give the kudos to the man. Mm. That's number one. Number two, how are you now going to define your presidency? And thirdly, what is the legacy that you're going to leave behind?
Any particular reason why, for example, Nelson Mandela seemed to be attracted to Cyril Ramaphosa to succeed him, as opposed to Thabo Mbeki, who actually had been a deputy president? What makes Cyril Ramaphosa tick, really?
I, to be honest, perhaps it's his background. You know, Cyril Ramaphosa is a trade unionist. That is a man who is fighting for the rights of those who are most marginalized. The guys who are fighting, or rather working in the mines, right? What rights do they have? You know, here you are, you work in a nice cushy office with air condition, right? You have pay, you have UIF, you have all these things that come as part of your package. But the majority of our people, the working class, don't have those amenities, right? So he's a man that has always been there fighting side by side next to the working class. So I think that's possibly why Madiba had a much more closer relationship, because, you know, you're on the ground. You're on the ground, basically. Wait. I don't know if my brother wants to add anything.
I think as far as a positive, well, it's nice to have some positive aspects of the man. This is a man who's a vendor. Right? We don't talk much about this. We don't like talking about it. Because South Africans like pretending that the nationalities don't exist, but they do, right? And so it's the first time.
What do you mean by vendor? Vendor, of course, is an ethnic community.
Yes, sir. Yes. They're one of our smallest ethnic communities that have actually we haven't seen, and by being small in number, you kind of don't see them prominent in many fields on TV and so on and so forth.
Is it true that they were seen by the large communities as essentially really some people who are down, really? They were socially and politically.
To be honest, business wise, where they come from, they are very successful. I must give them kudos. The vendor people, when it comes to business, independent, small, medium economic enterprises that are thriving, you go to the vendor area of South Africa, they are thriving. Mm-hmm. Much more than some of the BEE, people have been pushed. Without BEE, most of our people will not be surviving. Let's be honest.
Right. So, what Ndaba is saying then, so it's as far as our election is concerned, knowing that there's a high probability Mr. Ramaphosa is going to continue being a president of South Africa, it's actually a victory for the country's the country's sentiment towards tribe. That they can, this man, it's the first time that a non-Xhosa and a non-Zulu and a non-Musutu is a president. That's the gist of it for the viewers at home.
So
that's a victory for South African democracy. No. That this man, who's a polyglot, is actually going to take helm of the country. But I'm very pessimistic about putting too much stock on Ramaphosa the man, knowing that most of the ruling that takes place in South Africa comes from what we call the party list and the horse trading that took place already a year ago of who's going to be in parliament, who's going to be a minister, and this has very few of these things have to do with Ramaphosa the man. So the personality, by the way South African democracy is set up, the personality means very little to South Africans.
It's
who the ANC has picked, and the ANC did its pick a year ago.
I'm talking about the slates.
And the party list, who delivered, right? So if Mpumalanga province delivered 14% or so, as an example, then we would like to see 14% up there on the party list. Okay. It's a list of parliamentarians by seniority, who's going to be in the parliament. Now, why is this important for us as analysts? It's important because when we're talking about corruption, when we're talking about cronyism, when we're talking about who's going to clean governance, we must look at the list, not at Mr. Ramaphosa. Who is in the list? And has this person been there for the last 20 years? And if I'll make it easy for you, actually, the top 20 of the ANC, half of it, they've been there for the last 20 years. So if you're looking at the list and you're looking towards change, it's going to be very difficult to imagine it, looking at the list. And this has nothing to do with Mr. Ramaphosa's magnetism, however brilliant.
Very interesting. Ndaba, let me ask you a question that may seem to be a little bit unfair to you. What does it mean, for example, for having that kind of pedigree, for being a grandson of the Madiba? Is it a burden, or is it an opportunity, or is it both?
Well, I believe it is the gift and the curse.
Really?
It is a curse because the amount of pressure and people who expect you
the expectations
to lead in the footsteps of Mandela is vast. People want to see another Mandela, you understand?
Yes.
Rising up.
And you can't feel the shoes.
No one can feel the shoes. To feel the shoes will be a mistake. One needs to walk his own journey, but parallel to Madiba's journey. Because what is Madiba's journey about, if you truly understand it? It's about empowering his people. This is a man that sacrificed everything for the benefit of his people. So I, having grown up with my grandfather from the age of 11 years old,
yes,
understand that very carefully. And so I started a foundation called Africa Rising 9 years ago, which is all about youth empowerment. And we work only with the poorest area in the Eastern Cape. Actually, we started in our village, in Ekoon, right? And we work all the way to Mthatha, right? We work with mainly high schools, right? We do education, we do technology, we do agriculture, we do career guidance. For example, the technology program that we did, where last year we had 60 kids, 40 high school, 20 unemployed youth, to took them on a 3-month coding program with Oracle, right? And they got certificates to Oracle. But we are what? What are we doing? We are saying to the young people, regardless of how poor you are, what you have or don't have, you have the opportunity to get a skill. Here is a tool that you can use, and we're going to teach you how to use this tool so that you can make something of yourself, right? So we are giving young people the opportunity to dream. We're giving the opportunity for young people to have sense of self-value, right? We want them to understand that they are the masters of their own destiny. They must not blame the ANC. They must not blame the government. But they must say there is an organization called Africa Rising that cares about us and wants to see us succeed and wants to see us break in the cycle of poverty. That is what Nelson Mandela and the legacy of Madiba stands for.
Blame the ANC, because the ANC is the ruling party, yeah, and the people have always trusted the ANC to deliver.
Sure.
That is why the burden of proof and the burden of good governance in South Africa, it doesn't lie with who's in government. It should lie directly with the ANC, because the people of South Africa have given so much of themselves and their democratic hopes to the ANC. So yes, they must blame the ANC now.
But you see, what I've done, taken the bat in my own hands. I have gone to the government to say, here's a project that we can work on together. And not the problem that we have, not just in South Africa, not just in Africa, but in the world, we have what we call these computer comrades, right? They complain, but they do nothing about it. You complain and you complain, but when are you going to join the ANC so you can fight, so you can become a counselor, right? We need to start taking action, right? Mm. And if we're in a position of privilege, what are we doing about it to work with our government, to work with our political party, right? To try and work on a project that empowers young people.
That is
my point of view.
You become an author.
Yes.
You wrote a book. Going to the mountain?
Yes.
And in that book, somewhere, you talk about how your grandfather encouraged you and told you to create your own legacies.
That's right.
What sort of context was that?
Well, I can't remember the exact context, to be honest with you, but what Madiba was basically saying is that I want you to have education. I'm not going to tell you to go and work.
Quality education, I hope.
Quality education. I want you to get a master's, and if you can, get a PhD. But I'm not going to tell you to become a lawyer or a scientist or a pilot. You have to decide what you want to do. You have to decide how you want to contribute to your country. You have to decide what legacy that you leave behind. But most importantly, you must have higher education.
You must have a higher education.
Yes.
A higher quality education.
That's right.
Now, you also talk about how you cannot essentially really feel his shoes. You cannot sort of replicate him. You can only walk.
Nobody
in
can.
His light.
I'm not trying to go to jail for 27 years.
You can only walk in his light. Yeah, you talk about how, and you talk about, of course, how, what a very, very uniquely patient individual he is.
Because somebody, if I go to jail for 27 years, I might not have the same sentiments as Nelson Mandela.
You come back, Mandela. You come back and make peace with your enemies.
That's Nelson Mandela.
Yes, that's what you talk about. You talk about him.
And again, we salute Madiba because of the sacrifice that he's gone through and the decisions that he made to avoid civil war. Right?
Yes.
To avoid our country going to further bloodshed, the destroying of our infrastructure.
Right.
Right? And again, it would have been us moving 10 steps ahead. Nelson Mandela was very lucky, right? Or South Africa was very lucky because we were the last country to gain our independence. And so when Nelson Mandela was still in jail, he saw what was happening, right? 1915 Ghana, 1918 Zimbabwe.
Yes.
And they were kicking out their predecessors. And he decided, no, that's not the way to go. Otherwise, we shall be in a dark era ourselves.
Let me ask you some kind of a ticklish question, Professor Muyandu. You know, there are perceptions, for example, about South Africans. There are a lot of Africans who are concerned that South Africa does not seem to think it is part of Africa. That in fact, when you are in Johannesburg sometimes, you talk about going to Africa, north of Limpopo. And I have experienced that, as a matter of fact, at one time in Johannesburg.
We must be fair to our people.
Why is that?
We must be fair to our people. There is a historical reason for this. During apartheid, if you were black, because the apartheid government didn't want South Africans to leave and go get an education. In fact, our second president here to escape South Africa in order to go and get an education.
Right.
You needed what they called an exit visa.
Right.
So, because they knew if you went out, you'd be more powerful. So what was the aim? Because South African apartheid government felt so beleaguered by its neighborhood, the frontline states, that it reinforced in the education that it is exceptional, that there is Africa, the continent, and then South Africa, the special zone where there is separate development and so on and so forth.
Mm.
So this found, I would say, it outlived apartheid. And sometimes you then find it where black South Africans tended to be more cloistered, the same as white South Africans, and kind of less exposed to the rest of the continent. But to be fair, South Africans actually are not xenophobic. South Africans like their fellow Africans. South Africans have lived with their fellow Africans in South Africa for a long time. In Zulu, there's a word called Amazinzimban, which means people from Zanzibar, that every Zulu child learns. So South Africans have coexisted with other fellow Africans for a long time. But there are episodes.
In fact, when you read Mine Boy, you have these characters, Zuma, you see that South Africa was that kind of society that you mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
Well, unfortunately, time happens not to be our best ally. On that note, our distinguished guests are Ndaba Mandera, Puwokule Muyandu, and Anita Powell. Thanks to our audience for tuning into Straight Talk Africa. In the meantime, get better, not bitter, South Africa. And please remember to keep the African hopes alive.